Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And most of the jobs, particularly the higher paying jobs, are not going to be going to local British Columbians in those communities. So that's why the municipal city councils of places like Smithers and Terrace and Prince Rupert, that you would think if they believe these claims would be all for this project and looking at the job benefits to their communities that could certainly use them, yet they've all voted strongly against this project in recent months because they've looked at the math and they realize this is a terrible bargain for British Columbia. We take all the risks and we get none of the rewards here. The money is going to foreign corporations and it's going to the jobs in Alberta, essentially.
That's the voice of filmmaker and journalist Damien Gillis from the Common Sense Canadian, speaking about the opposition to the Enbridge pipeline and the ideological agenda of Stephen Harper and how First Nations and the people of British Columbia are headed on a collision course over the Enbridge pipeline, which the government seems to want to push despite massive opposition in British Columbia and across the country. So stay tuned.
We are very privileged to have Damien Gillis. He is a filmmaker and one of the co-founders of the Common Sense Canadian, Uncommonly Sensible. For information, you can go to thecanadian.org. Thank you so much for being with us, Damien.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Sylvia.
Now, when we look at our Prime Minister traveling to China and making promises that the Enbridge pipeline not only is being built, but that we will be securing trade deals with China to transport oil, what should that signal for us Canadians here in British Columbia?
Well, it signals that we have a big fight on our hands, basically. I'm just heading up to Bella Bella right now to cover the joint review panel hearings taking place in that coastal First Nations community. And they, along with 131 other First Nations in Alberta and British Columbia, have taken a strong stand against this pipeline. They've indicated that they will see the federal government in the courts or on the blockades, basically, is what Grand Chief Stuart Phillip told Resources Minister Joe Oliver yesterday on a radio program they both appeared on. And I think the general public in British Columbia is becoming increasingly disenchanted with the way this project's being shoved down our throats here by people coming from other provinces and from back east who don't really have an appreciation or understanding for the nature of our coast, how dangerous it is from a navigational perspective, how crazy this plan is. We've published articles on our website by commercial fishermen whose families go back three generations who have been fishing the coast and know those waters better than anyone, you know, for 80 years in one case, one family. And I've spent a lot of time out there myself, and it's an absolutely astounding plan that they have here. And we're seeing the changing of our federal laws proposed in this recent budget bill, the watering down of the environmental assessment process, retroactively to streamline this project through, as they say, gutting of the Fisheries Act and habitat protections. We're changing laws that are decades, even over a century old in some cases. We're slashing environmental staff at both DFO and the Environment Ministry, enforcement, everything they can absolutely do to change the rules of the game to make this thing go ahead. And yet, at the same time, in spite of all that, the resolve from First Nations and citizens who are opposed to this project only continues to grow. So we're on a trajectory here for a major conflict. That's unfortunate, but I think the people that are taking this position realize that how important it is to do that and not to cave into this kind of overwhelming pressure.
We're always looking at the economy. The economy seems to be central to all these discussions. And what we don't ask is, what do we lose when we destroy an entire ecosystem? What do we stand to lose?
Well, first of all, I mean, there are so many reasons why the economics of this project don't make sense for not only for British Columbians, but for Canadians. The big thing here is we've created a petrodollar here in this country. And so for every job that you get in Fort McMurray, you're sacrificing jobs in Hamilton and Sudbury and hollowing out the manufacturing sector of Ontario in particular, but what used to be the thriving heart of Canada's economy. It's created an artificially high dollar. This is known as Dutch disease. It's something that they've gone through in other countries. And so we're falling into that pattern here. And there isn't really any sort of real analysis of what the net impact is going to be to our economy. Sure, you may create some jobs in the tar sands, but what are you losing in the process? In British Columbia, there's just absolutely no doubt. We have a very strong tourism economy here. We hosted the Olympics here. We spent billions of dollars doing that and millions on shiny ads full of people kayaking on the coast amid orca and all, you know, salmon fishing in our beautiful rivers and streams. And this is the brand that we've created, Supernatural British Columbia, the greatest place on earth. And this is how we market ourselves to the world. We have a $10 billion tourism economy. A big chunk of that is specifically wilderness tourism that involves, you know, eco-tours, bear viewing, whale watching, etc. And all of that would be put out, not at risk, but certainly destroyed eventually. It's a matter of time. When you look at a company here, Enbridge, that has had 800 spills from 1998, in a decade after that, including a number of very high-profile ones that we've seen, like just ask the people in Michigan what it's done to the Kalamazoo River and to their economy. Just ask the people of the Gulf Coast what the BP spill has done to their tourism economy and to their property values, and not to mention the cost of the cleanup, etc. So we're talking about putting 50,000 wilderness tourism jobs at risk for 30 jobs in Kitimat. That's how many jobs we're talking about long-term once this pipeline's built. You know, even the construction process will be very fleeting, and most of the jobs, particularly the higher-paying jobs, are not going to be going to local British Columbians in those communities. So that's why the municipal city councils of places like Smithers and Terrace and Prince Rupert, that you would think if they believe these claims would be all for this project and looking at the job benefits to their communities that could certainly use them, yet they've all voted strongly against this project in recent months because they've looked at the math and they realize this is a terrible bargain for British Columbia. We take all the risks and we get none of the rewards here. The money is going to the foreign corporations and it's going to the jobs in Alberta, essentially.
But even if there were a lot of jobs being provided and created in British Columbia, I think this issue is about more than just jobs. You know, when we look Absolutely. At the kind of footprint that we're putting, you know, in our ecosystem and the decision by this government to completely, you know, abandon the Kyoto Protocol, you know, this signals to me a very regressive policy when it comes to how we understand ourselves in relation to the environment. So let's talk a little bit about that resistance, because while the government has been on the attack, people have also been organizing in multiple communities against this project, not just in British Columbia and Alberta, but throughout Canada.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just look at the last week here in British Columbia. We had close to 2,000 people turned out on a rainy Monday afternoon in Vancouver at the Art Gallery and then marched to Enbridge's Vancouver headquarters to deliver a message, you know, that their opposition that was led in part by the Heiltsuk First Nation from Bella Bella, where I'm going right now, in advance of this Enbridge hearing, and also addressing the proposed, much less known, but equally important, Kinder Morgan proposal to twin the Trans Mountain Pipeline to Vancouver, which would bring up to 300 super tankers right through our South Coast waters here, right through the Burrard Inlet and around Stanley Park and through the Gulf Islands, and some treacherous waters to navigate there for different reasons, but certainly putting, talk about economic risk, the economic heart of the province, and imagine what that would do with the spill. So these people have got together and delivered a strong message to both of those companies where they stand. Just today in Comox, there's a major rally going on there that's in conjunction with the joint review panel hearings that are happening in that community. And then tomorrow in Bella Bella, there's going to be another big event with thousands of people involved in advance of the hearings that are going to be taking place this week there. And that comes on the heels of all sorts. I was up in Prince Rupert about a month ago and posted a number of films on the rally of 2,000 people, First Nations, conservation people from the community of Prince Rupert, citizens who came together once again to send a message to these companies and this government that we're not backing down. So this really is turning into a widespread cultural movement. It's using film in music. We see young musicians like Takaya Blaney, 11 years old, who's been all over the world and on the national CBC, did a big program on her. We wrote a song about this, about Enbridge and oil tankers on the coast. And we see all sorts of documentary films getting traction around the world on this, and just a real abundance of media coverage too. And I'm actually pleasantly surprised to see the way the mainstream media in British Columbia and across Canada has really taken a much bigger focus on this issue in recent months. And I don't think they're buying the line that's coming from this Harper government about the jobs, about people who are opposed to this just being a small number of radicals, as they've characterized them, or people who are being influenced by an American agenda. I don't think the media or the public is buying into this. And as you point out, it's just getting bigger and bigger every day. And just at the recent rally in Vancouver, Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org, a global climate change activist organization who led the way on the Keystone Pipeline opposition in the United States, was at that rally. And he spoke and he reminded the people of BC just what an important role we're playing, not only within this Western Canadian dynamic here, but globally, and how many people are paying attention to what we're doing here. And the work that's being done to slow down the expansion of the tar sands and the increase of climate change from the carbon emissions associated with that. So we're all working together here, and I think this is becoming really a global movement, and that's very heartening to see.
I want to say that not only is the movement nationally gaining support, but it also internationally we see people uniting and supporting the efforts of Canadians. And to that effect, the government has come up with new rules in terms of what NGOs are allowed to contribute. Can you speak to this?
That's another thing they've done in this budget bill here recently is giving Revenue Canada certain resources and encouraging them to go after charitable organizations in Canada who are accepting funding from outside of Canada towards this kind of work in terms of opposing Enbridge. First of all, American philanthropies are just the biggest in the world, and they give a lot of money. It's one thing that Americans do very well is they give a lot of money to good causes, and there are a lot of large organizations there like the Moore Foundation and the Pew Foundation and the Packard and Bullitt Foundations that really have done a tremendous amount of great work funding the restoration of streams and the protection of the environment on a number of different fronts, including and particularly in British Columbia, work on the salmon farming issue here. But it's because they have a shared concern for these resources, and these are issues that don't just affect us within our Canadian borders. Climate change is a global issue. The tar sands is a global issue. Destroying our wild salmon affects our neighbors to the south of us as well. These are migratory species that don't know the difference between one country and the other. And so it's perfectly reasonable and acceptable and logical that people south of our border and around the world would want to contribute to these causes, just as people in Canada do the same in the inverse in supporting causes in other countries. So this has been made out to be something of that these Canadian organizations that have received some funding to do this work are somehow puppet organizations working on behalf of American interests. And the argument is, it's very convoluted. The argument is that they're essentially want to keep the tar sands to America. So they see this expansion of the pipelines and shipping to Asia as a threat to their domestic oil supply. And yet the same organizations have funded the opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline to the Gulf Coast of the United States and the tar sands in general. So the argument really doesn't hold up when you look at the fine print. And certainly they are going out of their way, though, by, again, changing the rules, basically mounting an enormous publicity campaign to characterize anybody who opposes this program, especially anybody from outside of Canada, as foreign-funded radicals, and it's just, it's absurd.
For us, though, I think it signals that we are a larger community and that worldwide people do care about the kind of air that we breathe. People do care about protecting mountains from being flattened for, profits. And people do care about the struggles that we are engaged in. So to me, I think it's only the responsible thing to do, that if we do care and governments are neglecting to, ascribe to a Kyoto Protocol or other types of arrangements that would help us slow down the impact of climate change that displaces millions of people worldwide, that, you know, this is our responsibility that we as citizens must take on. I want to end the interview by playing one of your videos that you post on the Common Sense Canadian, and this is the one by Takaya Blaney when she's singing. Can you set this up for us?
Well, yes, I alluded to her earlier. She's 11 years old from Powell River Slam and First Nation, and wrote this song about a little over a year ago, actually, and I'm not sure if you'll play these comments from her or not, so just mention that 1 year ago, earlier this week, from the time that she sang this song, 1 year previous to that, on the anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska, she went to the Enbridge headquarters and tried to present them with her song. But they chased her out of the building and threatened to have her arrested for trespassing if she didn't leave. And you could, you know, just imagine this 11-year-old girl. And she had her media in tow. Not a very savvy moment for Enbridge's publicity relations people. And but she's a tremendous little warrior, and she's really been at the heart of this movement, and she's taking her song all around the world, being invited to speak at different and sing at different gatherings to do with climate change and the kinds of issues that we're talking about here. So she's been a real inspiration to people in British Columbia and around the world.
And before you leave us, please tell our audience how they can get in touch with you, how they can access the Common Sense Canadian.
Well, you can go to thecanadian.org, and that's our URL, and we will be posting up more of these videos, a report of this rally in Vancouver last week, and then I'm going to, like I say, be up in Bella Bella this week, and I'll be reporting on the events that are going on, posting videos up there. There's all sorts of stuff planned, and the really big thing I just want to mention is that the youth of that community are leading a hunger strike this week in conjunction with these hearings. So I think this is really a big deal. And you talk about international buy-in, there's people from all around the world that have signed up on their Facebook page to support them in what they're doing. So I think that's going to be really inspirational, and there should be a fair amount of media interest in this. And so your listeners can go to thecanadian.org and check out some of those videos this week.
Thank you again for being with us, Damien, and thank you so much for your work.
Thank you, Sylvia. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye now.
I'm going to sing a song that I wrote 2 years ago, and it's called Shallow Waters, and it's based on this super tanker oil proposal. It was meant to remind people of the damaging effects of oil spills. It was meant to remind people, if we pollute and pollute and pollute, this beautiful ecosystem and biome that we live in will be all gone. And there's a lyric in the song that says, if we do nothing, it'll all be gone, which I think is the real situation over here. So this is Shallow Waters. And it was funny because a year ago on this exact day, I went to Enbridge building to tell them about what I felt about their pipeline. And I was just escorted out, and I was told that if I didn't leave, I would be charged for trespassing. Charge a 10-year-old girl for trespassing. So in shallow waters I can't see the wonders life God created to be. Tankers and pipelines keep coming through. I turned my head and so did you. Oh, 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 oh. Why do tears fall from the sky? Oh, 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 oh. Have we given up? Please tell me why. Remember the salty ocean breeze? You still will castles on the beach, splashing around in the summer heat. Now it's just oiled up to our knees. Bring back the days we used to care, when all of these troubles were not there. Cry for help, this is my song. If we do nothing, it'll all be gone. gold spills into my ocean dreams. Nothing will be found, no life is around. Just the sound of morning in the air. Silence everywhere.
That was the beautiful voice of Takaya Blaney singing Shallow Waters at the Vancouver No Tankers Rally in front of over 2,000 people. I also want to bring you coverage from Bella Bella. Damien went up there and took some video reports. The hearings were somewhat of a farce in the beginning, as Enbridge claimed there was a security risk and could not continue with the hearings. But at the time of this broadcast, the hearings have been resumed. So if reporting from Bella Bella, I'm going to play that video for you.
A lively but peaceful greeting by First Nations youth and community leaders of the National Energy Board Joint Review Panel team as it arrived in Bella Bella yesterday for scheduled hearings on the proposed Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline, prompted the surprise cancellation of today's hearings. Representatives of the panel informed Halesik First Nation leaders late yesterday afternoon that they felt threatened by the gathering. One of the key grievances of the panel appears to have been this man tapping on the window of the van transporting the panel members into town in an apparent attempt to get the passengers' attention. According to several media outlets this morning, one of the panel members reported hearing a loud bang on the van, characterizing the demonstrators as out of control and threatening. The RCMP, who provided security for the event, contradicted the panel's claims, stating the protest was a peaceful demonstration and there were no incidents to report of. Elected Halesik Chief Marilyn Slett revealed the panel's decision to cancel today's hearings at a community feast last night.
We had received a notice from the Joint Review Panel that they will not be proceeding with the planned sessions for tomorrow. Due to the perception of the reception at the airport today.
Halesik leaders met this morning with panel staff and managed to get the hearings back on track for Tuesday afternoon. But Chief Sled expressed her concern that the day and a half of missed testimony won't be made up with additional hearings.
To lose a day and a half is disrespectful to our people. You know, our people worked hard to put together their oral testimony. We have multiple members now that aren't going to have the time to do that.
The panel is also backing away from its initial claims, now citing logistical issues as the reason for today's cancellation. But an email from National Energy Board staff to Halesik leaders tells a different tale.
The email from the National Energy Board staff reads, I quote, "The panel cannot be in a situation where it is unsure that the crowd will be peaceful. Based on our experiences this afternoon, the panel is concerned that a meaningful hearing cannot be achieved."
Meanwhile, Halesik youth kicked off a 48-hour hunger strike yesterday to highlight their concerns about the proposed pipeline and supertankers in their coastal waters.
We're doing a hunger strike today because it shows Enbridge what it's going to be like after there's a spill, because we depend so much on our oceans for our food And once there's a spill, we won't have food left to eat.
The students are doing it on their own. They weren't asked to do it, and they volunteered to do that. And what we're finding now is it's going worldwide, and other people are joining the hunger strikes. You see on Facebook, people from all across Canada, we're getting responses to what our young people are, and thanking them for taking a lead on showing by an example of their commitment to put a halt to increased tanker traffic in our area.
That was a video by Damien Gillis. You can watch that video by going to thecanadian.org. And I also encourage listeners to check out our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com, where we have posted many videos relating to social, economic, and environmental change, and many audio interviews with remarkable speakers such as Damien and others, people around the world concerned with social change and creating a new paradigm. So that's latinwavesmedia.com. And thanks again for listening. We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.